Hej och välkommen till ett nytt avsnitt av Smortsnack med mig Samuel Liljeblom. Ja, jag sitter här på stugan nu med en härlig eld som sprakar i bakgrunden. Vi har varit här några dagar med några vänner och nu är det dags för oss att gå på semester. Men jag vill ändå släppa en härlig podd här som du kan lyssna på under sommaren. Och sen vi hörde senast så har jag varit involverad i Trosgnistans sommarkonferens på Rallingsåsgården. Där var jag med och predikade ett möte, tolkade de internationella talarna och roddade med konferensen i stort. Det var en väldigt lyckad konferens med mycket glädje, så jag är så tacksam att få vara involverad i den. Och om det är så att du vill stödja podden och Heavenbound i stort så kan du göra det via Swish. Och då är numret 97378 och det är viktigt att du märker det med Heaven 53. Jag var nyligen i Odessa i Ukraina. En helt fantastiskt vacker stad med mycket italiensk arkitektur och österrikisk sådan. Och det är denna stad som bland annat den välkända författaren Fyodor Dostojevski skriver om i sina texter. Det var väldigt mycket vackert där och ett väldigt fint operahus, men krigslarmet gick och flyglarmet gick, och det är en stad som är otroligt strategisk för båda stridande parterna och därför försvarar Ukraina väldigt starkt. Och jag tog mig dit genom att flyga ner till Moldavien, och därifrån så korsade jag gränsen. Och väl på plats så besökte jag en kyrka, men jag var även där för att intervjua pastorer inom kyrkan och även ledare inom synagogan för att höra kring situationen för den judiska diasporan i Ukraina. De börjar nämligen röra på sig väldigt mycket, den judiska gruppen som bor i landet, och en del stannar kvar och de gör lite olika beräkningar. Men jag ville se hur många som rör sig hem till Israel och så vidare, för att det är väldigt intressant att följa vad som sker i dessa tider. Och nere i Odessa så är Rabbi Wolf en känd rabbi. Hans företrädare Daniel också en spännande och mycket kunnig person, så jag tog ett smart snack med honom.
Yeah. Okay.
So what had happened that I told you before? We had two big communities, Jewish communities in Odessa.
Right.
After invasion, we lost one. So the second synagogue is closed now. Just few members that stayed in Odessa, they joined us because maybe, you know, we need 10 people for praying. Right. Yeah, so to be a part of community, not to pray alone, they come to us and they become a member of our community.
So the Jewish community, in order to pray, you need to be 10 people
yeah.
at least.
Yeah.
And is that then
it's official? It means that this public... Public praying.
Okay, in a public prayer.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. We say that when it less than 10 persons, 10 men that age under 13, all the blessing could be saying in empty space.
Right.
But when we have gathering of 10 elder men, it means we mean the elder man from 13 year after bar mitzvah.
Right.
It's official public praying.
Yeah.
So they need, it's important to pray with community. It's important for them. So some of them, they started to visit our community.
Right. And this community that we're in right now, we're sitting in the synagogue. This is Rabbi Wolf's
yes.
Synagogue where he teaches and he leads.
Yes.
This, for how many years have he been here?
He is in Odessa from 1998.
Okay.
So for 25 years.
Wow. And he's born in the Ukraine?
No, he was born in Israel.
Really?
Yeah, but we have a very interesting story. This place, it was synagogue. So it was during sovereign Ukraine, after Soviet Union. This building here was a warehouse during Soviet period. And this building was gave back to Jewish community to make here synagogue.
Right. After the Soviet Union.
After the Soviet Union.
So when the Iron Curtain fell, they gave this back to the Jewish community, because this town have had a prevalent amount of Jewish community even from the start. You have been very active here and done a lot of good for the city. But why we're sitting down right now is because I was visiting Israel 1 month ago.
Mm-hmm.
And over there I met with a lot of people from the Ukraine and Eastern countries that have now started to move back to the Holy Land, and they are starting their new life there. And from what I heard, a lot of people are moving from Odessa and places like this, and I heard that a lot of the Jewish community here in Odessa is starting to move.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to know more about your situation now, how you in particular have been affected by the war, and how your thoughts are right now. Are you planning on staying? Are you planning on going? How are the thoughts?
Okay, I will tell you all these stories because I know.
Thanks.
How it was and how it goes now.
Right.
So this first global thing I told you that we lost, our city lost one community, and you're absolutely right. From the very beginning, from the first days of Odessa, Jewish population of the city before the Second World War was approximately 33% of the city.
Right.
So really, we can. We are laughing when Russian propaganda say that Odessa is Russian city.
Right.
It wasn't Russian at any time of existing of Odessa.
Right.
It was a Jewish city, Ukrainian city, Greek city,
yeah.
Whatever.
It's a multicultural, multi-ethnical city.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is the main thing that remain until now, that we are really multicultural and multi-nations have here. So... few steps back about this synagogue. It was when it was returned to Jewish community, and when Rabbi Wolf came here with his wife, with Rebbe Tzinchaya, they found that grandfather of the wife of Rabbi, he was Rabbi of this synagogue.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely amazing story.
So the bloodline goes back.
Yes.
To there.
Yes. Her grandfather was rabbi. Now her husband is rabbi of this synagogue.
That's amazing.
Amazing story, absolutely. So he is here for 25 years. A few years before, he was a rabbi in Kherson. And now, after invasion... we lost one community. And the next... thing that could shock people, that a big part of Chabad community from Odessa left to Germany to be safe from Russians.
Hmm.
So it's really hard to believe. 50 years ago, it was absolutely unbelievable.
It was completely unbelievable. So now the flow of migration streams goes the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I don't know why it was Germany. Maybe it was easier for our rabbi to...
Yeah, but also because Germany have learned their lesson. They have taken the issue of anti-Semitism seriously, unlike many other European cities, like mm-hmm. One of the cities in my home country of Sweden, Malmö. Mm-hmm. A lot of the Jews are leaving from there right now because they don't take it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And the synagogue have to be under police protection. Sometimes 24/7, or maybe all the time. So
you can see how free,
yeah,
and how safe we feel here. The,
yeah,
synagogue is open. Yeah, we have two guards there, but that's all.
Right. But it's safe. It feels like this is almost a Jewish street. There's a kosher store outside. Yeah,
yes,
it's amazing.
Yes, yes, yeah, yes. It's when, because and when we are talking about Nazism in Ukraine, I have brilliant answer of the chief rabbi of Uman.
And just to tell the listeners, you made Nazism with air quotes.
Yes, yeah. yes. That you are right. I worked last year with BBC team, and we visited Uman. It was interesting for them how it works there in Uman. And a reporter asked rabbi from Uman, "What do you think about?" words of Putin about the denazification of Ukraine.
Right.
And his answer was absolutely brilliant. He said, I think he should stop to use drugs.
Really?
Yes.
Because it's so far from reality.
It's absolutely opposite from reality. Because during all the period of sovereign Ukraine until 1992, Jews feel in Ukraine absolutely free. We even have I don't remember exactly, it was 2 years or 3 years ago, we accepted the law and law about anti-Semitism.
Right.
And people could be jailed for some anti-Semitic actions.
Right.
So Jews are very protected here. Jews feel very free here. We can build our schools, universities, orphanage. We have very big orphanage here in in Odessa with a lot of Jewish children from different cities of Ukraine, not only from Odessa. When invasion started, just it was first days of March, Rabbi gathered about half of our community, mostly. First of all, it was children from the orphanage, so orphans, women with the children, wives of some members of our community, and men who had possibility to leave. I mean, possibility by the law, because you know, not every man could leave the country.
Like military aged men.
Yes, yes, from 18 until 60. But there are people who have maybe some illness, or maybe we have such a law that, for example, I have three children aged under 18, and I can. Free, I can go outside of country, I could be taken to the army.
Right.
By the law. So it was about, I think it's several hundreds, I don't remember exact numbers, but I think it was about 200 or 300 of members of community, and not only members of community, some people, not Jewish people, they also were taken by these buses that were organized by our community, and everybody mostly left to Germany, and this part of our community lived for the year. They lived there in Germany, first at one place, it was one hotel in the center of Berlin.
Right.
And they lived there, they have everything there that they need, they have place to live, they
right.
have food five times per day, so everything they needed
right.
there.
Because I was in Berlin this November, and you could see some people from the Ukraine arriving there,
yeah.
And things like this. They have taken a big responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, please go on. Yeah,
In the first months, synagogue continued to work. It wasn't any day, I don't remember. I was in Odessa, I didn't left from the very beginning until now. I'm here, and I'm visiting synagogue every day, and I know that it was open all this time. But I remember very good Shabbat before May 9th. We were expecting for some big shooting with missiles of
this
Odessa.
Year.
Yeah. No. Previously.
Yeah.
And I remember, I'm a member of our community from 1994.
Right.
So for 28 years, I don't remember such an empty synagogue at Shabbat. We had here about 20 persons. It was absolutely empty.
And you're usually how many?
Usually we have, can you see all the chairs? Mostly all of them are busy.
Yeah.
So more than 100.
More than 100 people.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. yeah. It's wow. We are not saying about big holidays, for example, for Rosh Hashanah, Jewish New Year, for Yom Kippur. There were not enough space in synagogue, and some people were staying outside.
Right. You filled the whole place up.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
But now it was about 30 people.
Okay. Yeah. And now it was the worst day that I remember, because synagogue was mostly empty because of some people who stayed in Odessa. They also decided for just for a couple of these days to left, for example, or some places in Odessa region, or those people who had the possibility, they left for Moldova, for example, just for a couple of days to sit there, to wait and to see what will be here. And then they came back. So now in the beginning of the March, most part of that of the part of our community that lived for an year in Germany, they came back. So mostly now, as I know, few families they stayed in Germany. We have few families that went to Israel. One of the we can call one of the assistants of our Rabbi Wolf. He moved to Vienna with his family. So mostly like this. Now we had in March we had Pesach, and just a few days ago we have Shavuot, the date of when Torah was given to us, and synagogue was almost full with people.
Okay, so what I'm getting from what you're saying is that there was another synagogue in the city of Odessa, and it was a couple hundred people. It was a Latvian Jewish community, and all of them left, except for maybe 10 or so people.
Even less. About five.
Maybe five stayed, and all of them moved. And could you just repeat where they moved to?
They moved to Romania.
Romania. And they are planning on building a life there. They are not, you know, continuing going down to Israel.
And,
they are,
as I know, the synagogue is closed.
Yeah.
We have two communities, and each community has its kosher store, kosher restaurant, school, kindergarten, university. We have almost the same structure of each community. Everything, as I know, from that community is closed now.
Right. So let me ask this. These different synagogues, is this a divide between Sephardic and Ashkenazic Jews, or is it just because it's different countries of origin, or how come it's two different ones?
No. Both community, Ashkenazi communities.
Okay.
But big leader, spiritual leader, is Rabbi Lubavitch.
Okay.
And family of, it's not family, they are not relatives, all of them, but the seventh Lubavitch's rabbi, it was just a second.
Sorry, I'm putting on the spot right here.
Menachem Mendel. Mendel Schneerson. Menachem Mendel Schneerson. He's a spiritual leader even after his death. And in all speeches of our rabbi, we can hear that as Rabbi said. So he made a lot of things to develop Jewish knowledge, Jewish tradition, to spread all over the world. As he said, we should have Chabad community at each place where you can buy Coca-Cola.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. And you know, it even says that in the Old Testament, as I call it, or the Torah, as you would say, that even though I spread you unto all of the ends of the earth, you know, in Isaiah and things like this, it says that I shall also now gather you. I will say to the country up in the north, give me back.
Yes.
I will say to the country in the south, come here. So it's something very special, I think, with the Jewish diaspora, because it have truly gone to all of the ends of the earth. And you know, when you were spread out to all the ends of the earth, then you could see, like, you know, Theodor Herzl and the Zionist movement starting. So
then
the gathering started again. If you're a believer in God, you believe that God started to gather back to the Holy Land.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm so interested in hearing about this. Maybe I'm a little bit like after the Iron Curtain fell, you know, people have been migrating back to Israel for a long time. But after the Iron Curtain fell, it was like a wave.
Yes.
Of old
huge wave.
Huge wave
in
of
the beginning of 90s. Yeah.
Yeah, like of old Soviet countries just releasing the Jews to go back if they wanted to. And I do believe that in these times it's gonna come another wave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think this is one of the places it might come from. Like you say, it's already a few hundreds that have left, and other places as well. So it's double-edged, because it's a hard time, but it's also a time where, if you believe in the prophetic, some prophetic messages are also fulfilled. I don't know what your theological or your, you know, thoughts are about this. Do you believe in this returning home movement, or do you believe it will remain, you know, spread out in the world? What would you say?
The philosophy of Chabad community, for example, says that it's not necessary to live in Israel. If you are sure that your way to the God will be much more stronger in Israel, yes, please go.
Right.
But if you are not sure, it doesn't matter where to serve to the God.
Right.
For example, Menachem Mendel Schneerson, he lived in New York and he was died in New York.
Right.
And his community worked there.
Right. This was the writing of Philon also, right?
Mm-hmm,
didn't
mm-hmm.
he say this, that you should, exactly yeah. what you're saying right
yeah,
now,
yeah,
that
yeah.
was his philosophy.
So
also.
Yeah,
yeah, we it are goes not, way back.
We are not saying that this is bad to live in it. No, it depends. If you feel that your belief to the God will be stronger there. If you feel that you will be stronger in your moving up, will be there. If you will get some more support, spiritual support there, please go there, live there. A lot of Chabad communities work in Israel. But if not, it doesn't matter where do you live and where you serve. Because the idea of Chabad, what is opposite to other synagogue and other community, I mean, they goes from Vilno. And their philosophy, our philosophy is to be open and to give Jewish knowledge to each person. It
right.
doesn't matter he has some knowledge or he has nothing. We need, for example, some young people from Chabad community, they can even go to the beach to find there a Jew and to help him to put tefillin.
Really?
Yeah,
it's very open.
It seems a little bit strange to put tefillin for the naked person,
right?
Because how you dressed at the beach,
right?
Yeah, and for example, for that community, it's impossible. But
right.
For our philosophy, it's much more better to help people to make some moves. Just to start to do something,
right.
It doesn't matter where you, even
right.
you cannot understand why you do it and for what you do it, but start to do it, then you will understand.
I see. So this is very interesting. So in your stream of Judaism,
mm-hmm.
it's an individual choice if you're gonna move back mm-hmm. or not, and it's up to really your belief and how well you think that you can adapt to the Jewish life if you live in New York, Odessa, in Warsaw, or
mm-hmm.
where in Jerusalem, wherever you live. It's an individual choice.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but when you're speaking with the community here, you're a part of the community. Do you hear a lot of people start speaking about Israel in a way that they haven't before? Like, maybe that's the place we should go because there we will be safe at last.
Now we live in material world.
Yeah.
And a lot of people know how expensive is Israel.
Right.
And for some people, this is such a stop factor not to go to Israel just because of it will be difficult.
Right.
But we have opposite stories. For example, we have a family. They're now in Israel. This is the biggest family of Odessa community by quantity of children.
Really?
They have 12 or 13 children.
Oh, they blessed.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And they are saint people. I know very well this family. They decided to move to Israel. I don't know what was the reason for them to go there. Maybe they feel inside of them it will be much more easy in moral way,
right,
to live in Jewish country. Because as for me, I know a lot of years passed, and I don't feel any anger, for example, for today's generation of German people.
Right.
But absolutely, I see, I know what a long way they passed
they have
through,
right,
with the sense of guilty, with understanding of huge mistake that they made as a people of Germany.
Right, and if you do go to Berlin, you can see it all through the city.
Absolutely.
And they have really dealt with it.
Yes, yes, yes. I know all the things, and now I don't feel any anger or hate, nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing negative to German people.
Right.
But as for me, it's impossible even to think about to go to Germany and live there.
Right.
It's impossible.
Right.
I cannot.
Right.
I don't feel comfortable there,
right,
because
right,
maybe it's, you know, some genetic memory.
Right.
It's even hard for me when I see German speech. Right. I have some associations.
It's fully understandable.
Without, I say again, without any anger, is without any hate or something like this.
Yeah.
I had one episode in my life that changed this attitude for me. I was watching football in a sport bar,
right,
and just the next table was one guy. We started conversation. He said that he is from Germany and he supported Germany. I was supported Netherlands, for example.
Right.
I don't know exactly,
right,
because I like Netherlands teams from the time of Van Basten and Gullit and Rijkaard.
I see,
We start just conversation about football. I even don't remember why I told that I'm Jewish, and I saw how he changed. He took me for the hand. He started to say, apologize about his people, what they done, and so on and so on. How guilty, how he feel it, and I know it is really heartbreaking for me.
Right.
I said, please calm down.
It's okay. It's
It's okay. I don't feel any negative about you, but it's some genetic memory.
Right.
So it's really, you are right, that it's absolutely individual choice of every family,
right,
and every person. Community as community, do not pushing on people.
No. Okay.
If it's comfortable for you to live here, please live here. If it's comfortable to live in States, go there.
Right.
You want to go Israel or Germany?
Right.
Be with the God in that place where you want to be.
Right. But this big family that you speak about, they made that choice.
Yeah. 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 And I know just several families that left to Israel.
So that's very interesting. And what's the future for your community here in Odessa and in the Ukraine in general, do you think?
I think in positive colors. For example, I can show you a very good example. You cannot feel the difference because you wasn't here, for example, 1 year ago, but just you want you to know that here we're now sitting in really renewed hall. We made a lot of repair works here. So even during the war, our belief in victory of Ukraine in this war, we wanted to show to the God that we so sure in the victory of Ukraine, and that everything will be okay, and with Ukrainian people and the Jewish people who live in Ukraine, who was born in Ukraine or who came to live to Ukraine, that we don't think that missile could shut our synagogue. We think about positive future, and that is why we started to be here very big. This hall was closed for 3 or 4 months. We prayed at the other little hall because here were a lot of repairs. Air works.
Yeah, it looks very nice.
Yes, and very fresh and new, because it's just repair works. They finished maybe 2 months ago, something
right,
like this.
So I see what you're saying. You're not thinking about closing down. You're thinking about expanding. You're thinking
yes,
about renewing
yes,
and keep on living.
Yes,
and
yes,
that's
yes,
wonderful to hear. And I also want to wish you God bless and I hope your community the best, and thank you for taking some time today, brother, to answer some questions.
You're welcome.
Thank you.